Oh, I just love that music. It's Finlandia by Jean Sibelius with Leopold Stokowski conducting his symphony orchestra. About 14 minutes after 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning, it's Mosaic. I'm Judy Wagley in for David Nicholas. And joining me in the studio, Maestro Fuad Fakhari, the conductor and music director of the Saginaw Bay Symphony Orchestra. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What did you think of that rendition of Finlandia?
I thought it was typical Stokowski. You know, he has his own interpretation, and it's clear, and it's always his sort of point of view on the piece, and you can hear it clearly.
I played that just for you, yeah. So we can talk about
that's
that.
That's right, yeah.
About what it's like to be a conductor. Yeah. So you are the conductor and music director of the Saginaw Bay Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. You have a big concert coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that in just a bit, yeah. I promise. But first, I want to get to this conductor business.
Right.
So conductor and music director, what does that mean? What are your duties and responsibilities?
That's a fantastic question. I'm asked that often. And we'll start with the title. So the title is the music director and conductor. And those are two separate titles combined into one, and most people really don't pay attention to what the details behind the titles. Music director, you know, you are the person who gets to design all aspects relating to the music and the season and the pieces, and take care of the business of the orchestra. You know, what pieces, what guest artists, auditioning musicians, etc. The conductor is the implementing part of it. You know, you stand in front of the group and you conduct the performance. So that's the basically the position. Most of the time, the thing that takes most of my time in terms of the job is the music director part of it, and I would say even further, designing the season. I think Fritz Reiner, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra conductor from the 50s and 60s, said it. He said about 80% of his time is spent designing the seasons and looking at what they're going to perform. And that's not as easy as it seems. You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into designing concerts, and typically it's like putting a puzzle and it takes a long time to do.
Well, that's sort of what David Nicholas and I do here.
Yeah,
we put these
exactly.
programs together with recording, right. So it's a little different, but we designed the program. So how do you go about doing that?
I mean, and it's interesting that you brought that up about how you do your work here. I mean, if you do it correctly, most people shouldn't feel that there was any effort done into it, right? So that it should feel seamless, and it should seem organic and natural, and this piece leads into that piece, and it just goes. But to get to that point, you have to do a lot of work and move a lot of different parts to get to that point where you feel, yes, this piece fits this next piece, and I can seamlessly transition and have some commonality between these pieces to be able to then discuss to the listener, in my case, the audience, and connect ideas through pieces of music. What I try to do on different concert performances and concerts is to have a balance between things that are different from each other, pieces that are different, whether it's different in terms of when they were written or stylistically, but also pieces that have some commonality that will hold the program together.
And this program coming up Saturday is called Saginaw Rising, Music and Voices.
That's right.
What are the common threads there?
So basically, this is a fantastic collaboration in Saginaw that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. I've never done any pieces with, repertoire pieces with choirs. This is the first time I'm doing it in Saginaw.
And oh, nice.
It's a combination. We have the Saginaw Choral Society and Saginaw Valley State University's choirs. We're combining those, and they're going to come and join us for the performance that we're doing. We're doing three pieces: Beethoven's Fourth Symphony, then we'll have intermission, and then Serenade to Music, Vaughan Williams, and then Bruckner's Te Deum will close the concert.
All beautiful pieces,
yes,
of music.
I love them.
So back to conducting.
Yeah.
So as music director, you choose these programs, you put them together, you present them to the board,
yeah,
and they okay them, and then you start assembling your scores, your performers, mm-hmm, all of those things, and then you do your homework.
Right, yes.
And you read through those scores and listen to those recordings or whatever,
yeah,
and then decide how you want to interpret them.
That's right. And those are, I mean, that's a very quick sort of, you know, you have to engage the musicians, you have to get the parts out to the musicians, you have to do the bowings for the strings, all of that stuff. It takes a lot of time. But to get to come back to the question of interpretation and the recording we listened to in Stokowski, I think when I was younger, I mean, as I was starting my career, I always used to think about music and certain pieces. How am I going to interpret this piece? How am I going to, what am I going to do with it? And as I get a little bit older, and maybe one hopes somewhat a little bit wiser, it's not always the case, I've just realized that, you know what, I think the best thing to do is not necessarily to interpret the piece, it's just to take the piece and see what the composer wants and try as much as possible to give a sort of a reading that is what the composer has written, she or he have written, and try to get out of the way as much as possible. I mean, you still have to do things that you feel you feel strongly about. But as I get older, I think, and a little bit more mature as a musician, I think distilling the piece to its essence and what's written on the page is far more of a challenge that's interesting to me at this stage than for me to try to say, oh, I'm going to do this because I think it's right.
Because it is interesting to listen to recordings or to go to concerts, mm-hmm. see different groups, different orchestras. Yeah. Same piece of music sounds really different. Yeah. Even when I look at recordings to play here on WCMU, just the lengths of the recordings, you know, maybe they might be minutes different.
That's right, yeah.
In a symphony or something, that's huge.
That is huge, yeah.
But just all the different interpretations from different conductors.
Yeah.
So think about the, you know, the famous conductors like Fritz Reiner, mm-hmm. or like George Scholte,
yeah.
Eugene Ormandy, Leonard Bernstein. Mm-hmm. What makes them, or what made them, great conductors?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, there is a multitude of reasons why we look at them as great conductors. There's definitely the time when all of the conductors that you've mentioned basically lived, I think, in the golden era of music recording CDs and, you know, and LPs. So they had a mechanism where they were sort of expressing their works, and there was a way to sort of have those works find their way to the public. Much less so today in terms of, you know, I mean, think about it. Today, how many of us own CDs or LPs? I mean, we're no longer in that time period. You can go just to a podcast and hear
mm-hmm.
it. So, or go online. So I think that the time was right, but that's just one small aspect of it. They're great musicians. They're fantastic interpreters that have their own ideas, their own personalities. And I mean, just going back to Finlandia with Stokowski, it's clear that he has a, you know, you might agree or disagree with his position or point of view on the piece, but it's clear that he has a definite idea mm-hmm. of how this work should be interpreted. And I love that. I mean, I think I would much rather go to a concert where there is an interesting interpretation of a piece of music by a conductor that I might not agree with versus going to a concert where there's no interpretation. It's played as is, but it's boring and dull.
Mm-hmm,
you
know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How does one get to be a conductor? I mean, you're a pianist,
uh-huh.
Or if you're, you know, a pianist, a violinist, a flute player, a trumpet player, you know, you practice your instrument, you become proficient, you know, you take lessons. You pretty much know if you've got it, you know,
right,
if you're
right.
good at it, if people like to hear you play, maybe you enter some competitions and, you know, you win some auditions. And you know if you're a decent musician,
right?
So and you practice.
Mm-hmm.
So as a conductor, how do you? I mean, I guess you could, you know, practice in front of the mirror, or if you're like me, you could air conduct here in the studio. No one sees me. Good
yeah.
thing. But how do you practice? And also, how do you know when you're good at it? I mean, you stand in front of an orchestra. You know, you look like you're in charge. You know, wave the stick. Keep the beat,
yeah.
cue the trombones,
right.
and you're all set, right?
That's right, yeah.
Well, I know there's more to it than
the
that.
The trick is, you said it, you look like you're in charge. I mean, sometimes you're not.
But how do you become a conductor?
So I, you know, different, it's a career that has different paths. I can speak about how I became a conductor. So I started studying piano. I mean, I come from a musical family, but I started studying piano when I was very young, at 5. And I was never a concert pianist by any means. I mean, I got to a point where I was a good pianist, but I was never a great concert pianist, but my interest was always in composition.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my grandfather's a composer, my father's a composer, so I've always wanted to write music. And when I came to college, I started as a composer as I was playing my piano in college and taking private lessons. And then when I finished that degree, I went into doing my master's degree in composition. And then all of a sudden, I found myself sort of isolated because, you know, when you're an undergrad, although you're a composition major, you still sing in the choir, you still take piano mm-hmm. lessons, you're still involved in a lot of activities because they're trying to round you out as a student. But when you get to your master's degree, it was specialized, and now you are to become a composer. So I was sitting in a practice room writing music, but there was no contact with other people.
Right, yeah.
I was not making
yeah.
music with anyone. And I always knew that even as a conductor, I have to be able to transmit my music to others. So I started taking conducting lessons, and that's how I got into conducting and got my next degree, and then went and got my doctorate in composition. So that was the path for me. I think the commonality, probably, if you ask all conductors, why do you conduct? It's basically you want to take your ideas and transmit them to others. And, you know, you can do it with one instrument, you can do it with 10 instruments, or you can do it with a full orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's one reason. But the other reason is I genuinely enjoy working with people. I genuinely enjoy looking at 70 musicians, trying to get them all, or 80 musicians, to have the same vision of this work and do it well, and then get out of their way and let them perform. I think that's when I do my best work. It's when I'm out of the way, when they're doing the work and I'm just standing there.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we talked about interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, as a conductor, how do you get the point across?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think more and more, I'm less worried about the technical aspects of conducting. You know, how do I beat this bar? How do I cue this? I think with experience, those things become secondhand. You know, I mean, you know how to cue, and you know how to beat this measure, etc. But that's what I'm mostly interested about. I spend most of my time studying the pieces from the point of view of what is this piece really about? What intentions were behind the composer's thoughts? I mean, why did this composer write this piece? And what he or she were trying to transmit? And then how do I take that point of view and transmit it to the musicians of the orchestra so that we can get that performance?
And I think really playing in an orchestra, conducting an orchestra, it's all about trust.
It is, absolutely, yes.
And you're trusting the musicians to do what they do, and they're trusting you that you've done your homework and that you have this nice interpretation and that...
Right. It's trust, and it takes a long time. I mean, it's like any relationship. You know, you can have a great first date, but to have a long-term relationship, it takes effort. It takes people, you have to work at it. Both sides have to work at it all the time, and you cannot take it for granted. You always have to come prepared. They have to come prepared. I have to come prepared. And we have to walk in, you know, we might, you hear this often, but it's really true. They might not like what I'm telling them to do in terms of an interpretation, some of them. And I might not like necessarily what I'm receiving, but a good compromise, I mean, a good working relationship, eventually you'll come to a point where things will work out. Yeah.
Well, you are in town for the week,
right,
for this concert. So obviously you have other conducting gigs too.
I do. So I'm music director of another orchestra in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Wichita Falls Symphony Orchestra in Texas. And in fact, after this week, I go back home for a day, and then I get back home on Sunday. I fly out on Monday to go to Texas. So, yeah, but that's the job. That's the nature of the conducting business.
So to develop these relationships, like with your musicians, mm-hmm. you know, that you don't see them every day.
I don't see them every day, but when I get to see them, when I go and conduct, I try to spend as much time as possibly I can with them. Certainly, it's not as much time as I would love to mm-hmm. spend, but I try to spend some time with them. Most of the unfortunate or fortunate, whichever way you want to look at it, but what's happened today in the field is that the music director is expected to play a significant role in the development and fundraising for the orchestra. So a lot of my week is spent working on those types of issues. Mm-hmm. How do we, you know, engage with our audiences? How do we engage with our patrons and our supporters? And so a lot of my schedule is spent doing that. But that's good. That's what keeps the music going on.
So you travel quite a bit.
I do travel quite a bit, yes.
Well, inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah.
How do you get through airport security with a bag of pointed sticks?
I always check them in. I never put them in my, I always put them under the plane so that I don't have to deal with that issue. Because I've had, you know, I mean, they'll let you in, but they'll always, you know, they see these pointy things, and if they've never seen batons before, they will always stop you.
Yes.
So I don't deal with it anymore.
And you have quite a few of them?
I have about three in case one breaks. So I just put them in a pouch and put them in my checked luggage and move.
I just had to ask.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's get on to this specific concert, and we'll play some music from it too. Beautiful concert, music and voices, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, two choirs, the Saginaw Choral Society, directed by Jeremiah Krenia.
Yes, he will be conducting the Vaughan Williams Serenade to Music.
Okay, and the Saginaw Valley State University Concert Choir with Kevin Simons is the
Correct.
Director?
Correct, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they have been busy preparing these two pieces, the Vaughan Williams Serenade to Music and the Bruckner Te Deum. They
yes.
have been working on those. Everyone is going to get together this week, two choirs, orchestra, yeah. cast of thousands, and make this beautiful music
yes.
for the concert that's coming up Saturday
Correct.
At 8 o'clock.
At Temple Theater.
Temple Theater. Mm-hmm. Also on the program, Beethoven's Fourth Symphony. Mm-hmm. I've got that queued up. We'll listen to a little bit of
Great.
That. So Beethoven's Fourth, sandwiched in there between the big heroic third
yeah.
and, of course, the big Fifth Symphony. The Fourth Symphony, yeah, it's
yeah.
a little, it's a beautiful piece of
it
music,
is.
But it doesn't get as much airtime.
It doesn't. And, you know, it's very interesting. You will see this often. I mean, his first is the breakthrough symphony, mm-hmm. and then the second is lesser.
We don't hear it.
We don't hear it. Then you hear yeah, the third, and again, the fourth is that. So all of his odd number symphonies are the ones that you hear often.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Even numbers
mm-hmm.
are
mm-hmm.
less heard. But I think the reason why this symphony, like the eighth, is performed less, he's going back, he's looking back instead of necessarily looking forward. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but this symphony is more akin to a Haydn symphony mm-hmm. versus the Beethoven that we know in the third, fifth, seventh, and ninth symphony.
Yes.
But it's still Beethoven, and it's, you know, it's a terrific piece of music.
Let's listen to a little bit of it Great. To give our listeners a sample of what they can hear Saturday night in
Wonderful.
Saginaw. This is the Vienna Philharmonic with Claudio Abbado conducting. Is that okay with
That's
you?
That's fantastic. I love the Vienna Philharmonic.
Yes, and this is the third movement. That was the third movement, the Scherzo movement from the Symphony No. 4 in B flat major, Opus 60 by Beethoven. Claudio Abbado led the Vienna Philharmonic. And Saturday night in Saginaw, you can hear Fouad Fakhari leading the Saginaw Bay Symphony Orchestra in the whole piece.
That's right, all of it. That's a great recording. I mean, it's Claudio Abbado with the Vienna is fantastic.
It's yeah. a wonderful symphony. And like
yeah.
you said, Beethoven was sort of looking back to Haydn. And then, of course, following that, the big Fifth Symphony, which everybody knows. But so that's on the concert Saturday mm-hmm. at 8 o'clock, Temple Theater, Saginaw Bay Symphony Orchestra.
Right.
And how can folks get tickets?
So they can call the Temple Theater or go on our website and purchase tickets that way.
The number is 989-755-6471.
That's right.
989-755-6471. Also on the program, two choral works, the Te Deum by Bruckner,
yeah.
which is a beautiful songs of praise.
That's right. Songs of praise. And he was a very devout, religious Catholic who played organ, brilliant organist. And, you know, I have something. I mean, Bruckner is not very popular necessarily, certainly not in the U.S., but I genuinely like his music. I think it's the closest I feel in terms of an aesthetic to being close to sort of a divine or to God. And certainly with this piece, it's just he really he is trying very, very hard to really praise God.
And we'll do that on Saturday night,
yes,
along
right.
with Vaughan Williams' Serenade to Music, mm-hmm. which is based on texts of Shakespeare,
yeah,
I believe.
That's right, yes.
Yesterday, during afternoon classical music, my program, I played several serenades. And a serenade is a love offering.
Yeah. Yeah.
And often instrumental music, and often done at night,
yeah.
As someone would play beautiful music for their sweetheart.
That's right.
But
yeah.
this is for chorus and orchestra.
It is, and it's interesting. You know, I mean, if you look at the background of the piece, I think he wrote it, first of all, for 16 voices only. And I think the 16 voices were his friends. So, they put a choir together, and there were 16 solo voices, and then it was adapted to choir and also soloists. So it and there is a version of it without any singing. So, you know, now you have these three different versions. But initially it was composed for 16 voices, and now you hear it most often with a choir.
Now, we have the Saginaw Choral Society and the Saginaw Valley State University Concert Choirs. How many voices there?
We have over 85 voices.
So oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. That'll be a nice big sound
it
with the
is.
Orchestra.
It's going to be a great big sound. So, yeah, we're going to have that 85, I think 90 singers, and the orchestra is about 70 musicians.
And I love the title of this concert, Music and Voices, Saginaw Rising.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could claim that. I didn't. That was done by our marketing department. But it makes sense. I mean, the pieces, especially the Bruckner, it's about the idea of praising God and this idea of just rising and feeling hopeful about life. And then the fact that we're bringing these three different entities from town, it seemed like a good title for that concert.
Oh, yes. Everyone making music together.
That's right.
Oh, it's so exciting.
It is exciting.
Let's listen to a little bit of the Vaughan Williams.
Great.
We'll listen to a little bit of it, then we'll fade it out because it's a little longer than
yes.
we have time for.
That's right.
So here's a bit of the Serenade to Music by Rev Vaughan Williams. Of Sweet Harmony, a little bit of the Serenade to Music by Ralph Vaughan Williams. That was the London Philharmonic Orchestra and Chorus under the direction of Sir Adrian Bolt. And you can hear that music, the entire piece, this Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Temple Theater in Saginaw with the Saginaw Bay Symphony Orchestra, the Saginaw Choral Society, and the Saginaw Valley State University Concert Choir under the direction of my guest today, Maestro Fuad Fakhari. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, it's a beautiful piece.
Huh? It is a yeah. beautiful piece of music. It's very dreamy.
It is. It is. It's a wonderful piece. Too bad I'm not conducting it on this performance.
Oh, you're not conducting
it? No, this piece will be conducted by Jeremiah Kraniak, who's the conductor of the Choral Society. So I'll conduct the Beethoven and the Bruckner, and he'll do this one.
Okay. Yeah. So shared duties.
Yes, and I'll be listening to this piece.
Oh, well, that's good, too. You get to take a little break.
That's right, yeah.
So why is it important for people to come to this concert or to any live symphony orchestra concert?
I think that's a great question that I often think about. The simple reason is, you know, there aren't many spaces today in our society and in our normal life where you can get to sit down and just really get to listen, you know, to spend time listening and not just hearing, but listening, actively listening. And this is a space where, I mean, we have 1,750 seats in the auditorium, and we're typically at 1,300, 1,400, 1,500. So you'll get a group of people that will come together for a joint experience that they will experience together, listen to great masterworks like the Bruckner's Te Deum or Beethoven's Fourth or Vaughan Williams, and get to experience part of our heritage, part of our history, our Western art form that has survived generations and years and centuries. I mean, this is what makes us great human beings, you know, that this idea that we can experience these things together. There's a communal feeling about it, a sort of a sense of coming together to share an experience. And for me, it just moves me. I mean, you know, when I listen to some music that is done well, you're moved. You have feelings that you would not have had you not listened to those pieces. It's just, it's a joy. We have a board member who was trying, we were trying to come up with a tagline for next season or this season, and she said, when I come to the symphony, it's always magical, musical moments. And that's how she feels about it. And I think it's true. I mean, you get to feel however you want to feel, but this, there's an idea of magic, there is music, and there are moments that are that all come together to give you a certain experience.
And you're right. When you come to the concert hall mm-hmm. and you're sitting in the chair, hopefully your phone is turned
that's
off.
That's right.
And you have no other distractions, and you can just sit. You could have your own thoughts, shared thoughts with the folks around you. I know it's always fun when you go to a concert before and after during intermission to chit-chat with folks. Hey, what do you think about, you know? And it is a shared experience. And it's exciting.
It is. It is a shared experience. And, you know, you get to see 70 or 80 very, I'm just talking about the orchestra, not only the choir, but 70, 80 musicians who are unbelievably talented working together to give you one product with one sense, with one purpose, one vision. I mean, there aren't many things in life that we do today where you get to see 70, 80 people in real time working together without speaking to each other to give you this great product. So it's a fantastic thing. And I'll just like to add one more thing for your listeners in this area specifically. Many of our musicians come from, our principal musicians come from the faculty of CMU. So
yes.
So we have a lot of ties between Saginaw and the university here.
And fabulous musicians.
Fantastic
too.
Musicians, mm-hmm, absolutely, mm-hmm. Yes.
And then to put them with the, have the two choruses come together too, and everyone working together.
That's right.
That's another conversation there.
Yes, it is. It is. And but that's, I mean, honestly, and we talked about it earlier, that's what I do. That's why I do what I do. I love bringing people together. I love having them come together and share this the passion, the enthusiasm for these great works, and having it come to fruition at a great concert.
Well, Maestro Fouad Fakhari, thank you for what you do, for what you do for the musicians, giving them this wonderful experience, and for audiences and listeners everywhere.
Thank
for
you.
For bringing the beautiful music to all of us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Maestro Fouad Fakhari is the music director and conductor of the Saginaw Bay Symphony Orchestra. The concert this weekend, Saturday night, 8 o'clock at the Temple Theater in Saginaw. Saginaw Rising, Music and Voices, Saginaw Rising. For tickets, call 989-755-6471.